and Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. We're learning new details about the suspect in yesterday's shooting spree in New York. Anna Schechter reports he left a note saying he was sorry and had a degenerative brain disease. The NFL was located in the building he targeted.
He said that the league failed to address the brain injuries like CTE that he himself felt that he experienced.
He shot and killed four people. Britain's prime minister said today the UK will recognize a Palestinian state in September if Israel doesn't agree to a ceasefire in Gaza. Ross Smith of the World Health Program on the food situation in Gaza.
This is unlike anything we have seen in this century. It reminds us of previous disasters in Ethiopia or Biafra in the past century.
The death toll in Gaza has now surpassed 60,000. U.S.-China trade talks continue today in Stockholm, the U.S. team calling them constructive. CBS News Brief, I'm Cammie McCormick.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. The Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development has reported a decrease in unemployment rates across the state for the month of June. The new data released last week found that the majority of cities in the state saw a decrease in unemployment rates. Among the 35 largest cities, 24 of them saw the unemployment rate drop, 5 cities saw no change, and 6 cities saw an increase in unemployment. Over the last year, 22 of those cities have seen a drop in unemployment, with 6 remaining at a steady level and 7 seeing an increase in unemployment. The $200 million data center planned for construction in Wisconsin Rapids has been canceled. City officials were informed when Digital Power Optimization put out a press release. The AI data center would have been built on the former Verso Mill site in Wisconsin Rapids. Mayor Matt Zacher said DPO and companies like them are seeing potential sites with power opportunities and locking them up in a contract. Before these companies begin construction, they try to find someone to purchase the energy they would potentially produce. If they can't find a buyer, they abruptly cancel the contract without warning. Mayor Zacher said the city is moving forward with ensuring the cleanup on the old Verso Mill site and rail yard happens. MRD Group and Capital Recovery are continuing demolition and cleanup efforts. Once cleanup is complete, Wisconsin Rapids will have 250 acres of open land to develop with 80 to 100 megawatts of available power in coordination with Capital Recovery Group. There's a concealed carry weapons class being offered in Portage County this fall. The class will be taught by sheriff's deputies who are certified Department of Justice firearms instructors. The class will take place on Saturday, September 27th from 8 a.m. to noon. You can find more information and register by calling 715-346-1444. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
The Brewers back in first place. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers with an 8-4 win over the Cubs in Milwaukee. That put the Brewers back in first place, a game ahead of Chicago. Cubs lefty Matthew Boyd had been the hottest pitcher in the league, but gave up 5 earned runs off of 6 hits in 5 innings pitched. Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
Yeah, I don't think Boyd had his best stuff. We took our walks. You don't see him walking that many guys in a game ever. So I love that part of it. What a day for Contreras and Yelich to come up big.
NFL Packers training camp continues today in Green Bay. In Madison, the Wisconsin Badgers packing up the team bus, headed to UW-Platteville to begin training camp. Defensive coordinator Mike Tressel on what he told his players.
Talk about our defensive objectives. Our guys have looked at every single day since spring ball. These are the numbers that put you in the top 10 defense in the nation in each of those areas.
That's Badgers defensive coach Mike Tressel with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, slight storm chance, and a low in the mid-60s. For tomorrow, a mixture of sunshine and clouds, still a chance of storms, and highs in the mid-70s. Sun's back for Thursday. Highs again mid-70s. Currently, it's 87.
How serious is youth vaping? Irreversible lung damage serious? 1 in 10 kids vape serious? Which warrants a serious conversation from a serious parental figure, like yourself. Not the seriously know-it-all sports dad, or the seriously smart podcaster? It requires a serious conversation that is best had by you. No, seriously, the best person to talk to your child about vaping is you. To start the conversation, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Sometimes as dads, I think we're too hard on ourselves. We get down on ourselves on not being able to, you know, we're the providers, but we also have to learn to take care of ourselves. Arapaho way, you got to pray for yourself as well as for everybody else, but never forget yourself. Self-love made me a better dad because I realized my worth.
Never stop being a dad. That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll be talking about the gubernatorial race along with Trigvi Olsen, the Lincoln Project, and Pat Kreitlow. A morning to Pat Kreitlow. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4. This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
That is what makes democracy great. The power in a democracy is derived from the people. It resides in the people. These individuals that we have elected don't hold those seats in perpetuity.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Why are we cutting Medicaid, which is overwhelmingly popular with both Democrats and Republicans?
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
You know what we need in the United States is more paperwork.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody, and welcome back if you're rejoining us. Happy Tuesday afternoon. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Folks, if you've been listening to the show, you know that last week and the week before, I've tried to talk about the Epstein files and the scandal that keeps on rolling in the context of those that were targeted, those that were victimized by Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, and to try to refocus our attention on what continues to permit, what is in our institutions and in our structures and in our culture that makes violence against women, especially intimate partner violence, as well as the broader problem of human trafficking, so pernicious and so persistent and so hard to uproot and combat. I'm really pleased and humbled to be joined this afternoon by an expert in these matters. She is Marielle Barnes. She's a professor and assistant professor of public affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She studies forms of everyday kind of violent experiences that women experience in intimate partnerships, and the relationship between gender and institutions. So really happy to have her here. She is also the core faculty member at UW-Madison of Madison's Sexual Violence Research Initiative, which is an interdisciplinary group that's really focusing on these issues. So welcome to the program, Ariel. I really appreciate you being here. Let's establish a baseline just in the category of sexual violence and intimate partner violence, because I think many people have a somewhat limited notion of what that is. Could you help? Let's just start with a basic definition of terms and what are we talking about here?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Maggie. I'm really glad to be here talking about this. So to define kind of intimate partner or what I call everyday violence, I would say these are forms of violence, and they're not just physical or sexual. They can be a whole range of like financial, economic, emotional, psychological, stalking. They're kind of violence that happens, you know, every day or in the normal course of our people's lives. And I'll say women because the majority of victims are women, like 9 out of 10 victims. And so they're kind of these forms of violence that a lot of the times we don't kind of notice, I think. With Epstein, obviously, he's a very prominent, very high profile, or he was a very high profile person. And so there's been a lot of attention around that. But those kinds of, let's say, incidences of violence, I think, are more rare when we consider like the totality of violence against women that happens in our society.
One of the things that I find both troubling about the Epstein case and perhaps even an important opportunity that it represents is wealth and acute power asymmetries allow abuse on scale or at scale, and it becomes replicable. And that's what you see in the Epstein case and the Epstein scandal. But again, that's at scale due to wealth, power, and access. The reality is it's a tiny fraction of the overwhelming amount of violence against women that is occurring, as you put it, Professor, on a daily basis. What is it in culture, specifically American culture? And is there a different point? Are we in a different cultural moment? I've heard many women and many advocates saying that there is so much toxicity and so much of a regression into what I'm going to call big time gender stereotypes. Again, very regressive, where it seems to be, especially from the right, encouraging men to adopt a very aggressive posture towards women and encouraging women to effectively take a submissive posture, and what this could be doing to the already overwhelming problem of sexual violence against women in this country. Your thoughts, Professor?
Yeah, I think that's right. I wouldn't say it's just a U.S. problem. I think this is a global problem, and at the heart of it is misogyny and patriarchy that are causing this. And it's this hatred of women. And I often think that misogyny is one of like the easiest kind of hate ideologies to adopt, because it can be anything from like, you know, locker room jokes that people always tell, or like vague sexism, but it often like progresses from there, right? The other thing I study is the manosphere, which is this kind of toxic masculinity ideology that's kind of emerging that you hinted at. And I think in this particular moment, particularly since COVID, we've seen this increase in violence against women. We can see that like in homicides and femicides that are happening. So I know in, I think it was 2022, like Wisconsin had, I think it was 96 homicides related to domestic violence, which was has been constantly increasing since about 2020. And to kind of put that in perspective, like a lot of times people say like, oh, well Wisconsin's a special case because we're so rural and like, you know, there's lots of suicide and homicide in rural kinds of areas because farmers are struggling. But Minnesota, which is just across the border, which would be like our closest kind of neighbor or comparator, had, I think, about 24 in the same year. So there's something happening, I think, in Wisconsin, in American society more generally, but also across the world, to see this kind of increase in violence. And I think you're right to say that people in power a lot of the time have been pushing this kind of anti-women, anti-feminism, anti-gender equality agenda.
Yeah, it's a disturbing moment. I hear again from women, and especially women that interact with immigrant communities, as well as women of color, that are particularly concerned that in effect, the threat level has gone up a goodly amount, a substantial amount, since the rise of MAGAism and Donald Trump. And certainly with the beginnings of his second term, that rhetoric has, if anything, sort of been amplified and is accelerating. I want to talk a little bit about the systems and the systemic failures that at least we've had reporting in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about women that have come to law enforcement and said, help me, I'm in this situation, and been turned away, in fact, been made fun of. There seems to be a system failure, both a what are the laws that address this, especially when it comes to stalking? What is the relationship, and how do our police react to issues related to and complaints of domestic violence? Walk us through, Professor, some of the systemic issues that prevent us as a society from really making inroads to reduce intimate partner violence.
Yeah, so I think attitudes of law enforcement is definitely one. It's certainly better than it was. Like, yes. I have talked to police and law enforcement and prosecutors, you know, who used to who used to be working in the 80s and 90s, and they're at that time, it would have been like, you separate the different parties, you tell them to calm down, and they all go back into the house together. And so it's not quite that bad anymore, but there's still a lot of disbelief, I think. And when women report, oftentimes they're not believed, or it's not seen as violence. So I used to work as an advocate on a domestic violence hotline, talking to people. I remember hearing stories about like abusers sending their victims flowers, and the flowers ending up on the doorstep. And the victim had requested like no contact. They had a protective order in place, and they would report these flowers to the police, and the police would say, oh, they're trying to say sorry, like they're apologizing. And what the flowers are not an apology. The flowers are the abuser saying, I know where you are and I can get to you at any time, right? And it's this kind of control. And having people or having law enforcement like not follow that up and not enforce the protective order in place is a problem. The other thing that I would say that's happening in this current moment is lack of funding. And given to different organizations who are helping victims of violence. So, and this has been happening not just during the Trump administration, but during the Biden administration as well. The big one most recently was what we call the VOCA cuts. And so VOCA is the Victims of Crime Act. And under this act, white collar crime and penalties and fines are put into a fund essentially that is then dispersed by the federal government to states that is then dispersed to people working with victims of violence. The problem is that this fund, the amount in this fund is getting smaller and smaller and smaller over time. And so they've cut the amount that is dispersed from that fund. In some cases in Wisconsin, I think we were facing a 60% cut in funding from that fund. And I know some organizations, some domestic violence organizations, were losing 80% or more of their funding. And so they're thinking like, we can't keep a shelter open anymore, or if we do, we can't keep it open for 24 hours. You know, we can't provide the level of advocacy and service. You know, if we do court accompaniment, maybe we cut that. And so there's these kind of cascading failures, right? Mm-hmm. And then in the current moment, we've also had the Trump administration put forward a number of executive orders which have had consequences for funding. So the federal DOJ Office for Victims Violence Against Women like shut down their granting process for a couple months, and so no money was coming out of that. Or a lot of organizations are having trouble about how they need to comply with some of the federal government executive orders, but also comply with like HUD regulations, right? So one of the things is you need to take gender identity into account when providing HUD funding, because you don't want, you know, boys and girls, they each need to have their own room a lot of the time past a certain age. But you're not allowed to do that under the current executive orders. So there's this kind of tension about what to do and how to go about it and how to disperse funds to the people who need it the most.
Yeah, when talking about gender-based violence, it's a little bit difficult to do so if you can't talk about gender or you can't make any reference to gender in the sorts of ways that you and I are discussing. I have worked with some of those nonprofits trying to make sense of what is nonsense. Again, my opinion, not my special guest. Her name is Mariel Barnes. She's an assistant professor of public affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She focuses on sexual violence, and she's a core faculty member of UW-Madison's Sexual Violence Research Initiative, which is an interdisciplinary group designed to investigate the psychological, societal, and policy aspects of sexual violence. We're not going to be able to get into this, but I want for our listeners and for you to start thinking about how economic vulnerabilities make women and young women especially, again, perfect targets for sexual violence or predators like Jeffrey Epstein, and why the funding from VOCA, the violence, what was the acronym again, Mariel?
Victims of Crime Act.
Victims of Crime Act, why that funding is so essential, because in order to get people out of that cycle, oftentimes there are substantial economic obstacles. We're going to talk about those intersections. And then, of course, what can we do about it? What can you do about it? What should we be asking our elected officials to do? We come back with our special guest, Professor Mariel Barnes of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
The spirit of the Cowboys special.
Spirit comes from soul. It's not something that happens to you. It's something that happens in you.
You take pride in yourself. You take pride in your brand.
It's hard work. It's perseverance. It's dedication. And it's preserving what's old and keeping it new.
The spirit of the Cowboys is the last wild free thing left.
Boo Barn, share the West.
All eyes will be on the Wisconsin Rapids Raptors as they become the Central Wisconsin Mashers in tribute to all the potato farming brings to our area. Join them for their annual Mashers Night on Friday, August 1st. Don't miss your chance to win one of the specialty jerseys in their silent auction presented by Food and Farm Exploration Center and McCain's Foods. Gather your family and head on down to historic Winterfield for this spudtastic game as the Raptors try to mash the Lakeshore Chinooks. First pitch at 6:35, but the fun lasts all evening.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Baby bald eagles near the Great Lakes are testing positive for PFAS and other toxic chemicals. Researchers found that eagles living near the Great Lakes had 6 times more toxic chemicals in their bloodstreams than inland populations. Other chemicals found in the baby eagles' bloodstreams were DDT and PCBs, which were banned decades ago. A small Wisconsin school district just got some big clean energy bragging rights. The Elva Strum School District in Trempealeau County unveiled 184 ground mount solar panels that will deliver about 20% of the district's energy needs and will be a living classroom for students to learn about solar energy and energy data. The installation cost $150,000 and will pay for itself through energy bill savings in about 8 years. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org. or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are the National Park Foundation, and together with you, we're creating a future where every person, every generation, gets their chance at an unforgettable moment. Learn more at nationalparks.org/foundation.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got a special guest with us for this half hour. Her name is Marielle Barnes. She's an assistant professor of public affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where her research focuses on using a mixed methodology approach to look at aspects of sexual violence or intimate partner violence. Thanks again, Professor, for being with us. I wanted to talk a bit about the intersection of sexual or intimate partner violence and economic vulnerabilities and the Victims of Crime Act and that funding source is an element of the solution, but it points and highlights really the economic obstacles for women that are trying to get out of these sorts of relationships. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so economics is really, really important. One of the biggest barriers to leaving an abusive relationship is a lack of housing and the fear that you're going to be homeless. So I am part of an evaluative study looking at Wisconsin's pilot program on domestic violence housing first. And so this is the idea that if you provide women with housing or rental assistance, you will remove them from those situations. And we are seeing great results with that, and we're seeing that it works, because what do you do if you're being abused and you have nowhere to go? Like, yes, you could go to shelter, but shelter is not a permanent process, and oftentimes shelters are full, particularly if you have kids, because there's not enough beds and there's not enough services in Wisconsin right now. And so having somewhere safe to go that your abuser doesn't know about, that is the right size for your family, is really, really important, where you can pay your utilities. I was traveling up north as part of the project, and we were taken to past a house that didn't have any electricity, not because the utilities weren't paid, but because it didn't have a hookup. And this was suggested by someone, not with the organization, but someone in the community, as a place where women who are trying to leave an abusive relationship could go and be safe. And it's like, they cannot go there, right? You cannot live in the 21st century without electricity. That's just not okay in modern day, modern day America. So economics is a big factor. A lot of the time what we see is also transportation is a big problem. And so even if you live in Milwaukee, where, you know, you have buses and things like that, getting to a job is really, really hard. And you need to get to a job in order to pay for your rent, pay for your food, support your family. And if you can't transport yourself, that's a huge problem. And this is also particularly a concern in rural areas where you might have to go like a long way to get to your job. And so providing that support, particularly for, you know, housing, transportation, that's the kind of assistance that VOCA could often be used for, right? Mm-hmm. Particularly when it was given to a domestic violence organization, that's what they would spend it on a lot of the time. Or they'd spend it on like advocacy services, so actual advocates, help doing the work and the legwork to help women get those things. So economics plays a huge role in helping people leave. The other thing I would say about that is like people often forget about financial abuse. And that's really, really common. So like either, you know, you work a job, but your partner takes all your money, or you're not allowed to work a job, or your partner has run up huge amounts of debt in your name and trashed your credit, or you've been evicted before and there's been damage because of the violence that you've been, you know, from your partner. And so that's now on your record, and that makes it harder to like get another house, get another job, that kind of thing. So yeah, it's this kind of vicious cycle.
Again, folks, if you're just joining us, we have Professor, Assistant Professor Mariel Barnes of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She's one of the core faculty members of their sexual violence research initiative. I want to talk about what can people do about this. I know that there are men of good faith out there of all political persuasions that find this abhorrent, that are shocked by it, that are disgusted by the rates of this sort of sexual violence against women and the incidence of human trafficking. What can a regular person, especially some of our male allies out there, but just all of us in our collective day-to-day lives, do about this? And what should we be asking our elected officials to do about this?
Yeah. I think the most important thing is recognizing, first of all, that it's happening, and asking people if they need help. So you don't need to confront the abuser and like threaten to like beat them up or stuff like that. That can often make the situation worse for victims. But if you suspect someone is being abused, like offering help, telling them that you will be there, telling them that you will support them, they can come to you at any time. That's the other thing about being in this kind of situation. It often takes multiple times to leave a situation. I think the average, the figure that's thrown around is 7. And so a lot of people get kind of tired of like victims going back to their abuser, but just letting them know that when they are ready, you will be there to help them can be really important. In terms of elected officials, like writing to them, letting them know that they should support this. It was very heartening in the Wisconsin budget that just got passed. The legislature allocated $66 million to make up for that voter shortage, so that's great, but more needs to be done. We need to apply pressure to our elected officials.
Folks, that's Assistant Professor Mariel Barnes. Mariel, would you be willing to come back sometime and talk about the things like what happened with the Iowa shooting victims at schools and this very particular issue of gentlemen generically referred to as incels in the intersection with media, because that's a pernicious problem as well. We really appreciate your time, Professor. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. When we come back, I'll break down the Epstein timeline and why this hypocrisy is so unacceptable. Don't go anywhere. There's a link to Green Bay and some breaking news this afternoon that involves the GOP party up there. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. It's so hot out that you need to watch the road. A smooth ride can quickly turn bumpy and dangerous. And here's why. When something's heated, molecules begin to vibrate and move more, making more space between them, expanding. And pavement slabs do just that and push against each other. Called a pavement buckle, it can sometimes blow up. It can happen on local roads and even on the interstate.
If you are going at high speeds, depending on the severity of the buckle, it can cause the car to go in a different direction, or you might go over it and wonder, like, what was that? Because you might feel a little heave from the road.
That's Rebecca Simkowski, the director of Wisconsin Department of Transportation, Bureau of Highway Maintenance.
So it is a safety concern. When people hit those, unfortunately, we don't know when it's going to happen. They're difficult to predict. I mean, if we could predict them, I think we would take some safety precautions. But at this time, we just don't know when it's going to happen.
Try not to drive over a buckle if possible. Instead, slow down and get into another lane.
We really want them to be safe. And if there is a condition that they see, or, you know, they can report that, and we'll try to get that addressed as soon as possible. And then I mentioned 511, that information, you know, when roadways are closed or there's issues, we'll post those so they can always be aware of what's happening in their area.
Good news. Relief in the temperature surges in on Wednesday, and crisper, cooler, sunny conditions will prevail. For Civic Media News, I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. As far as episodic TV goes, nothing gets me more excited than a well-done cop show. There have been two spinoffs so far from the Amazon Prime cop show Bosch, a show about a stubborn, uncompromising police detective played by Titus Welliver. In a new cop show, Welliver heads up the cast in Westies. According to Collider, Welliver plays Glenn Keenan, a Vietnam vet and gritty beat cop. The story is set in the early 80s in Hell's Kitchen in New York and follows the Westies, a real-life Irish street gang, as they try to carve out a piece of the action despite being a much smaller force than the Mafia's five families of New York. Welliver calls his character deeply corrupt and very dark, but also nuanced. Joining him in the cast are J.K. Simmons, Tom Brittany, Jessica Francis Duke, and just added additions Sarah Bulger and Stanley Morgan. The Westies will drop on MGM Plus sometime in 2026. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, slight storm chance, and a low in the mid-60s. For tomorrow, a mixture of sunshine and clouds, still a chance of storms, and highs in the mid-70s. Sun's back for Thursday. Highs again mid-70s. It's 88 right now.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand, when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hear that? That's the sound of your life. Perfectly imperfect. Beating in rhythm to the world you've created. But every time you drive after drinking, the music gets drowned out. Your life sounds pretty great. Don't let a buzz ruin it. Buzz driving is drunk driving. Don't drive buzzed. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Pat Kreitlow. On Wednesday, guests from the Chippewa Falls School District will talk about declining enrollment and the disproportionate way that school districts are hurt when it comes to state aid.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
Welcome back, everybody. And welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Some breaking news today out of Green Bay. Reporting by the Green Bay Press Gazette that a Sturgeon Bay man was charged 5 days ago with possession of child pornography after law enforcement say that they found images of child abuse and bestiality uploaded to his IP address. The who here matters. The man who is charged is a gentleman by the name of Scott Susek. He's 56-year-old, again, of Sturgeon Bay. And his wife, Stephanie Susek, is the chair of the Republican Party of Door County and the former chair of the 8th Congressional District GOP. And here's where it gets really awkward and very confusing. Apparently, on July 15th, 2009, 16 years ago, an investigator from the Door County Internet Crimes Against Children Division interviewed Susek and reported that he admitted then, 16 years ago, to downloading child pornography. The Sturgeon Bay police officer investigating Susek in 2025, this present, most recent investigation, wrote that, quote, it remains unclear as to why the 2009 case was not referred to the Door County District Attorney's Office for prosecution. Again, why did that happen? In other words, why did no prosecution happen some 16 years ago? And apparently, this guy, maybe he took a break, but apparently he's found his way to continue to commit these kinds of very heinous crimes. Apparently in this most recent charge, more than 300 images of child abuse material were uploaded by Susek's IP address on March 12th, including bestiality. This is disgusting. And again, his wife, chair of the Republican Party of Door County, someone put that information out onto Twitter or Instagram, and immediately Joel Kitchens, who is the Republican representative from Sturgeon Bay, so a member of the assembly, took up to defend Stephanie Susek and replied, I believe, to this post on Facebook, a Facebook post that, quote, Representative Kitchens knows Stephanie and believes 100% that she knew nothing about it, saying she is a wonderful person. I hope you will show some compassion and try to imagine what she is going through right now. Again, 16 years, he admitted to it back in 2009. Representative Kitchens, when we're talking about child porn in the era of Epstein, you might want to take a pause. Maybe not jump to the defense of Mrs. Susek, and wait until the investigation proceeds. Just disgusting, disgusting. And again, all of this happening under this cloud of deep hypocrisy from Donald Trump and the entire MAGA movement as it relates to Jeffrey Epstein and the files. I've heard the rebuttals from Republicans. Why didn't Joe Biden release the files? This was not something that Joe Biden or Democrats ever ran for president or any other elected office on. It was the purview of the MAGA movement and Donald Trump. It was Donald Trump, not Joe Biden, back in 2015, that made suggestions that Bill Clinton was criminally implicated by the Epstein files. And this was during, of course, Donald Trump's campaign against the Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton. That's what he insinuated back in 2015. Of course, the QAnon conspiracy then took off during Donald Trump's presidency. What was the QAnon conspiracy garbage basically rooted in? The number one conspiracy theory that it based its existence on was freaking Pizzagate, the idea that Democrats and only Democrats were engaging in this global ring of human and child trafficking and sacrifice based out of a pizza parlor in Washington, D.C. It was so incredibly provoking to people that a swarm of people showed up at this arcade slash pizza parlor demanding to see the basement. And there was no basement. And this continued on and on and on for years, whether we're talking about Dan Bongino or Kash Patel or Trump himself, constantly fanning the flames of the QAnon conspiracy Pizzagate theory, insinuating at all times that it is Democrats and only Democrats that would be implicated if these files were released, and insinuating some effort at cover-up. Again, this has been the talking point from the right, from virtually everyone surrounding Donald Trump. Did they never think this moment would come? It's not like they didn't know that there aren't hundreds of photographs spanning some 15 plus years of Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein together. They missed the moment when Donald Trump wished Ghislaine Maxwell well back in 2020, a convicted child sex trafficker. He wished her well. Again, what is even going on here? This goes back to, of course, recent statements by J.D. Vance, 2021 and in 2023, and Donald Trump Jr. in 2023, saying these things, what's in the file, and making an affirmative case for Donald Trump's reelection because he would release the Epstein files. And of course, Donald Trump denying earlier this month that he appeared in the Epstein files. And then reporting from the Wall Street Journal just days ago that Pam Bondi directly told the president back in May that he's in these files. Well, Jacob and Jamie did some work for us this afternoon and put together some large cuts. You'll recognize the voices here that take us through some of this chronology. Let's start with that first one, Jacob. Let's take a listen.
But I don't understand why the Jeffrey Epstein case would be of interest to anybody. It's pretty boring stuff. It's sorted, but it's boring. And I don't understand why it keeps going. I think only pretty bad people, including fake news, want to keep something like that going.
It's a very delicate subject, but we should put everything out there and let the people decide it. I mean, the White House and the White House team are privy to facts that I don't know. I mean, this isn't my lane. I haven't been involved in that. But I agree with the sentiment that we need to put it out there.
I do know that the Epstein files are in the custody of the Biden administration. You know, I don't know to what extent they've added or deleted things. It's kind of amazing now. Democrats who did not want them released, now they want them released. So again, I'm a little concerned about chain of custody. I don't know anything about it. I'm as curious as anybody else.
I've said it. Dan Bongino said it. We've reviewed all the information, and the American public is going to get as much as we can release. He killed himself.
Unbelievable amount of charges they've tried to file against the president. I'm sure this would be handled the exact same way. What we're simply wanting to do here is give them cover.
What did she tell you about the review? And specifically, did she tell you at all that your name appeared in the file?
No. She's given us just a very quick briefing. And in terms of the credibility of the different things that they've seen.
That is incredible. Again, that was Senator Mark Wayne Mullen admitting that they're trying to provide cover for Donald Trump. Why would Donald Trump have anything to fear from a special prosecutor or any investigation or release of files if there's nothing there? What's the deal? Oh, wait, maybe he knows that his own party invents stuff out of thin air and lies about it for years and years and years and tries to make something out of nothing. And that now his base has been activated under this particular file. So any mention of Donald Trump, which has to be probably pretty frequent since he was on his plane, Jeffrey Epstein's plane at least 8 times, according to the manifests and other reporting. Yeah, kind of hard to put this genie back in the bottle, the toothpaste back in the tube, after you fanned the flames for years and years, if not decades. Of course, Donald Trump said in June 2024, during the heat of the campaign, that he would release the Epstein files. That was in an interview with Rachel Campos Duffy. Yes, that Duffy, wife of now Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, on Fox News, said he would release the files. QAnon believers voted for Trump by a margin of 61 percentage point. It was a core element of his coalition. Pam Bondi said in November, right after the election, that there is, quote, no legal basis to keep the names in the Jeffrey Epstein documents private. That was in November. In January of this year, Kash Patel vowed to release the files and expose Jeffrey Epstein's connections. I will do everything, if confirmed as FBI director, to make sure the American public knows the full weight of what happened in the past and how we are going to countermand missing and exploited children going forward. In February, Pam Bondi hyped the release of the Epstein binders, which turned out to be an entire nothing burger once they were eventually released. And then in March, because of the outrage over the Epstein binder nothing burger in February, told Fox News that the FBI was working, quote, around the clock in 12-hour overnight shifts to get further evidence ready for release. She told Fox Business she relieved a truckload of unreleased documents. In May, she insisted that the FBI was reviewing tens of thousands of videos with children or child porn. And of course, again, based on reporting from the Wall Street Journal, it was also in May when Bondi told Trump he's in the Epstein files. And of course, don't forget the Epstein-Trump feud in early June. Remember when Epstein tweeted out, mark this post for the future, the truth will come out, at real Donald Trump is in the Epstein files. That was June 5th. And on June 6th, Kash Patel, this is cut 19, Jacob, cut 19, Kash Patel on the Joe Rogan Experience said, yep, we're going to release these files. Let's take a listen.
I don't have that one.
Oh, that's too bad. We've
it's
got
in the
it.
Super we'll clip. Look.
Yes, well, it's it. That was part of that supercut. Do we have time for that second supercut? We do not. We're going to take that when we come back because, again, the hypocrisy here is stunning. Donald Trump saying this is boring. Only bad people are talking about it. His tweets disparaging his base. What happened to release the files? What happened to running on this in June of 2024? What happened to draining the swamp? This is insane. This is hypocrisy at the highest levels. We'll talk more about what this means for Wisconsinites, especially given the revelations of the charges relating to child pornography coming out of Green Bay. That defendant with connections to the Green Bay, excuse me, the Door County Republican Party chair. This discussion continues on the other side. What's it all mean for Wisconsin? We discuss next right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
Smokey the Bear.
Then you know why Smokey tells you when he sees you passing through. Remember, please be careful. It's the least that you can do.
It's what you desire. Don't play with matches. Don't play with fire.
After 80 years of learning his wildfire prevention tips, Smokey Bear lives within us all. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. And remember,
only you can prevent wildfires.
Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
This message is for Karina, our mom who finished her high school diploma at age 28. Hi, Mom. It's Amethyst and Nicholas.
Congratulations on getting your diploma.
You worked so hard and have taught us so much.
We love you.
When you graduate, they graduate. Finish your high school diploma for you and for them. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free and supportive adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Using meth?
You're listening to Rafters Baseball here on WFHR, brought to you by 8th Street Auto, Econ Electric Inc., Party Envy, Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep, Comfort Air Heating, Cooling, Fireplaces, McCain, Stevens Point Brewery, Delta Dental, Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa, Gamber Johnson, Mid-State Technical College, Skyward, Solaris, Aspirus Health, and the Food and Farm Exploration Center. Listen to Rafters Baseball here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM WFHR, and streaming on the Civic Media app.
It's back to the Duck Pond for the Rafters today as we welcome you into the Rafters pregame show here on WFHR. Thanks for tuning in tonight as the Rafters, as mentioned, here in Madison, Wisconsin, taking on the second place Madison Mallards. And right now, the Mallards sitting just two games back of the lead in the Great Lakes West. So a lot on the line here. The Rafters hoping to play spoiler, but they have got a tough competition ahead of them. Taking a look back to last game, the Rafters ended up having a dominating game from the pitching staff. They had a shutout game into extras. However, in the 10th inning, that was when the Green Bay Rockers took the lead on an unearned run on a passed ball. So not a single earned run in the game allowed by the Rafters pitching staff. The best pitching performance we have seen all season long, as Tony Torres got the start. Justin Battle followed it up. Preston Steiner had a perfect inning. And then, of course, finished off by Landon Dessart, although he did take the loss in the game. Final score was 1-0 in the 10th, and the Rafters offense just couldn't get things rolling along. They're going to be looking to turn that around, but have a tall task ahead of them with the Mallards having Luke Ross on the mound for Madison. And taking a look at that matchup a little more in depth, it's going to be the left-hander Seth Spencer on the mound for the Rafters. Spencer back on the mound after struggling on the road, but at home he has been looking dominant. His last time out did come on the road. It was at Wausau, and he actually started off the game really strong. In five innings pitched, he did not allow more than two hits and two walks, and had thrown just 64 pitches. But in the sixth inning, that's when they got to him, which tagged him for five runs. Four of them were earned in that inning alone after he was pulled from the game. So ended up being not too strong of a start from him, but the beginning of the game was really, really good, and he's looking to go back to that. And we'll go a little more in depth with him later. Same with the Mallards starting pitcher Luke Ross, who has a 4.91 ERA. Going to go a little more in depth about him when we come back from the pregame interview. However, that is coming up, and I'll be talking with Preston Steiner, who I previously mentioned. He had a 1-2-3 seventh inning in the game, actually eighth inning in the game just 2 days ago, back on Sunday at Witter Field. And well, him along with the rest of the pitching staff really looked good there. Going to get his perspective on that. And, of course, just how the season's gone for him as well. All that comes up next on the pregame interview. And then starting lineups and a starting pitcher breakdown to follow here on the Rafters pregame show. This is WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
You're cruising along Highway 54. You're jamming out to your favorite song. You slow down for a red light when out your passenger window, another car revs their engine, wanting you to race. Now, at first, you're like, no, I can't. But before you finish your thought, the light changes green, your foot slams the gas, your adrenaline is surging until your check engine light goes on and reality strikes. Have fun again in your vehicle. Work with the team at Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep.
I'm the threat that's already inside the house. In the closet, under the bed, in the car. But I don't want your money or your TV. I can't be scared away or negotiated with. I'm patient and quiet. I don't sleep. You can't call the cops on me. You can't even see me. I'm the threat of family fire. And as long as your guns aren't stored securely, I'll be there. Protect your family. Secure all your guns. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. That's endfamilyfire.org. A public service announcement brought to you by Brady and the Ad Council.
I'm Scarlett Johansson. My family relied on public assistance to help provide meals for us. These meals fueled my involvement in theater and the arts as a child, which fostered my love for acting. The Feeding America network of food banks helps millions of people put food on the table. You can join the movement to end hunger by donating, volunteering, and advocating. Because when people are fed, futures are nourished. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/act now. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hello and welcome back into the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters pregame show here on WFHR. I'm Austin Thomas, and joining me on the show, it's Preston Steiner. And Preston, last night, what a performance, not just for you, but for the entire team. And, or sorry, 2 days ago, it was, feels like yesterday though, because man, that game went by so quick, and in large part due to how strong the pitching was. You got in as part of the action, one inning pitched. It was a 3-up, 3-down inning for you, and definitely your best performance of the season so far. How did you feel on the mound in that game?
It felt pretty good. Honestly, it was pretty much just trusting my catcher and let everything play middle and trust my fielders behind me. I think they did a pretty good part in that too. Overall, it was just throwing strikes.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the defense, no errors in that game as well, and it certainly helped out not just you, but the other pitchers as well. Between the four of you guys who got into the game, there was not a single earned run allowed, and only the one unearned run that came across in the 10th inning, of course. But, you know, setting you up into the game, a couple of scoreless innings from Tony Torres, four of them from Justin Battle, and then you come into the game in a 0-0 situation in the 8th inning. What was it feeling like for you when you entered into that game?
I mean, It was something. Like, when I came in, I honestly didn't realize that it was the bottom of the eighth. And I mean, honestly, just got to go out there and compete. Like, that's kind of all it comes down to, whether it's a 10-0 game or a 0-0 game. Like, as a pitcher, you still have to throw strikes, still have to compete. So, I mean, nothing really changed there a whole lot.
Yeah, well, obviously not the start to the season that you've been looking for, but last game for you, really big step in the right direction. What did you feel was different about your performance last time out versus the first few times you've been on the mound?
Outside of games, I've been working with Spears and Manny a lot, and I think just working with them and rinsing and repeating every day, it kind of just came second nature of, like, all the mechanical stuff that I need to do, and I was trying not to think about it on the mound, and I think it's kind of what I just need to do is just not think.
Well, hey, it worked out for you then. Yeah. But, you know, you look back at your collegiate career as well over at North Iowa Area Community College and trying to get that transition here into the Northwoods League. What's been kind of the biggest difference for you personally when you look at comparing your collegiate springs to the summer here in the Northwoods?
Honestly, I'd say the fans.
Really?
I mean, yeah, like, it was a community college. Like, we had 50 people show up to every game, if that, and the people that did show up, it was parents. I mean, now you got all the little kids and all the fans that come out. It's pretty sweet. I remember coming to a Northwoods game when I was little and looking at these guys like they were MLB stars, and now, I mean, here I am, so it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, you mentioned coming to these games when you were little. Did you go to any Rafters games?
I didn't. The closest one for me was Madison, so okay. I went to a couple Mallards games.
So coming back here to Madison, what's it feel like to kind of be in the dugout now?
It's pretty sweet. I mean, you definitely just got to take it in because, I mean, season ends in 2 weeks, something like that. So, I mean, it's coming up here pretty quick, but just trying to take it all in while I go and try to keep the momentum coming forward and taking me into fall ball for school.
Yeah, trying to make the most of the moment as well.
Yeah.
It seems like that's kind of been a focus of the guys. Obviously, you know, two days ago, we did lose a couple of coaches and Nick Adrian, and over the past couple of weeks, we've been losing a couple players. But, you know, the guys that are left over here, everyone who's still on the team, it feels to me like you guys are trying to bond closer and closer with each other. How has that felt from you, kind of going with those guys, and as you slowly get to the end of the season, you're trying to build connections with them?
I mean, you're with these guys every day, so it's kind of hard not to build a connection with some of them. And, like, the guys here, we know that guys keep leaving and our staff is getting shorter and everything else is just getting a little smaller. So I think it's just more getting closer to the guys, having fun while you can, and doing your job on the field.
You get to do anything fun on the off day yesterday?
No, I actually didn't. I slept for most of the day.
Oh, man.
I wanted to go golfing, but I think my car said otherwise, breaking down.
Oh, man. Well, I bet you're feeling a lot more relaxed now, though, after getting to spend some time to yourself.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was definitely needed, especially after the outing. I don't mind taking a little me day.
No, I completely get that. Well, that's really all the questions I've got for you. Anything else that you want to add?
Nothing I can think of, no.
All right, well, I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Once again,